Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators, a podcast for translators by translators, bringing you simple strategies to build better habits. In each episode, we'll focus on specific habits for translators in various stages of their careers. If you're a translator who enjoys learning about habits to improve your business and lifestyle, then this is the podcast for you. We're your hosts, Madalena Sanchez-Zampalo
and Veronica De Michelis. Like you, we are professional freelance translators trying to balance the challenges that come with building a career and maintaining clarity and boundaries between work and personal life. We hope you'll join us in this conversation about smart habits and discover some simple strategies you can apply today to help you build your career and achieve the lifestyle you desire. Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators. This is episode 45, and today we'll be talking about specializing and keeping up with your specialization. But before we start, let's share what's new with us. So I'll start first. I am thrilled about going to Moscow to visit my family in just a few days. Mm-hmm. My daughter and I will be spending 10 days there, and it's just been so long since the last time that I was there. I just can't wait to see the city where I grew up. Wow. And see my family and friends.
That's exciting.
And we might visit St. Petersburg too, which I love as well. I have family in St. Petersburg, so we'll definitely take a short trip there. And then we're planning a family vacation in Portland and the Oregon coast in July. We just booked that trip too. So this summer for me is all about like doing all those things we couldn't do last year. I'm here for it. Just so much travel.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And other than that, I'm busy with some translation and localization projects, ATA related work, and my personal projects that I've shared about in our recent episodes. And what about you? What's new with you?
Oh, man. Yeah, we're in the thick of summertime here. So a lot of us are thinking about travel. I will be actually just in a few days going to Minneapolis for our conference site visit for the American Translators Association's annual conference, which is later in the fall. Yeah, we typically do this site visit. The conference organizer does it with the president and the executive director and our events manager in the winter. But of course, that didn't happen this year because, you know, nobody was traveling in January. But I'm actually a lot happier about going to a very cold climate place in the summer rather than the winter. So I'm okay with that. So we'll be checking out the conference site, making sure where everything will be and how it's going to be handled, especially with, you know, various COVID protocols and restrictions and things like that in place. And then we just got back from a long weekend we spent in San Diego, which is only about an hour and a half from where we live. We took our daughter to the San Diego Zoo Safari Park, so she was very excited about that.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, and I have also been busy with translation work and some copywriting work as well, and ATA work too, obviously. I mean, we're really in the thick of conference planning right now, and we are about to open registration for the conference in July. So anybody who's considering joining us, either virtually or in person, watch for that to open up soon.
Oh, awesome. I can't wait to be there in person, but it's so great to have the virtual option too this year.
Yep.
All right. So let's jump into today's episode. We've all heard how important it is to specialize as professional translators and interpreters, but not everyone agrees with this. There are many who believe that specializing is not necessary and that you can get enough work as a generalist to make a good living. We're not here to argue that you can't, of course, but we do feel that specializing is an excellent way to stand out as a professional, gain better clients, and open more doors for future opportunities in an area that you already know well. So to kick off our conversation today about specializing, let's first mention our own specializations and why we work in these areas. So in our previous episode on diversification, I shared that I focus on localization and linguistic testing and quality assurance of websites, apps, and software. So I really enjoy that work, making all these online platforms and, you know, app-based platforms available for Russian users. I also do translation, editing, and transcreation in areas such as marketing, communications, human resources, and social responsibility. And that is based on the fact that before I became a freelance translator, I worked as a HR manager, CSR manager, and communications manager throughout the years. I worked for 18 years in this different roles in a major international oil and gas company. So it's right up my alley. It's areas that I know very well. I have hands-on work experience in them. So it was natural for me to focus on them in my translation work as well. And then there are certain states here in the United States where there are large Russian-speaking communities. So I also enjoy translating documents that are intended for the Russian-speaking communities in the United States on topics such as health and legal and education. And I do a fair bit of official document translation, too, because I really enjoy serving people who either plan to travel or move for work or studies, either from Russia to the United States or vice versa. So these are my areas of specialization. Now over to you, Madalena.
You have quite a bit more than I do in the sense that mine is actually very, you know, like succinct. Mm-hmm. I specialize in life sciences and medicine. So I do a lot of like patient medical records, a lot of documents related to clinical trials and documentation. I will get often, you know, various types of documentation that, you know, from before a trial, throughout the middle of the trial, and then after trial related to results and all kinds of outcome reports. And so how did I get started in that? Not like you, I didn't work in corporate, but I actually started as a healthcare interpreter when I first got into the profession. Yeah. So I was a healthcare interpreter for a couple of years. And so my training, in the area of healthcare comes from starting out as an interpreter. So I had a lot of training in that. I did a lot of studying. I did quite a bit of workshops and various things, a lot of research, a lot of studying. And that is an area that I developed. So when I switched from being an interpreter over to doing solely translation, it felt like the right fit already for me. Mm. And I really enjoy the work that I do, but I've carried that over into copywriting as well. So I also am a copywriter in the areas of health and wellness, which are areas that have always interested me. So they seem to go well together and hand in hand. I do some translation and copywriting in the areas of marketing communications, but much of it is really in the healthcare realm. And mm-hmm. I would say that it's an area that where there's quite a bit of work for both translators and copywriters. I do, of course, edit as well, like many people who translate. And let's see, I think that's mostly it. The localization that I've done is mostly related to education. So like you, like the apps and stuff like that. So, and that's from my background in education, which I have talked about here before. I have done several years of teaching at the university level, at least 10 years. And so that is something that I'm familiar with, is training and education and curriculum development, things like that. So yeah, so that's sort of a mix of a background, I guess. But that's, you know, the good question is, how do you get started with a specialization? Because you have a very different background than me, and we both came into it from different directions, right? You know, you might think, well, how do you know what you're going to be good at? There are a lot of ways to approach a specialization. So I've heard from many colleagues who have a background in a specific field already, kind of like you, but that really led them to their specializations. And then there's others who've said that their specialization kind of found them. So I think that no matter which way you enter a specialization, the most important thing is to keep up with it. Continue to learn and refine your craft and grow in your field. Do you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. And I know, even though I had experience in specific fields that I've mentioned before I became a freelance translator, it's hard, you know, getting started and having, you know, that uncertainty on what exactly should I specialize in, and are the areas that maybe I have personal experience or professional experience in, will they be a good area to specialize in as a translator or an interpreter for that matter. But it's really helpful to start with something you enjoy, enjoy doing, enjoy talking about, enjoy researching, because I think it's just going to make it more fun and sustainable to keep up with, both when you enter the specialization and as you continue to grow in that particular field. Mm-hmm. Because if you choose a topic or a couple of different topics that you don't really enjoy, that you find challenging for some reason, or just not something you're having fun with, it's going to be really hard to motivate yourself to find the time and invest that effort into growing in those subject areas. So that's what I really found, both in areas that I specialize in, because I have work experience, obviously, topics like human resources management and corporate social responsibility for me, I've invested years of my professional life into them. So mm-hmm. That means I really enjoy them. Otherwise, I wouldn't have done that. So it was an easy pick for me to specialize as a translator in those areas too. Even though I feel comfortable talking and writing on these subjects, I also need to keep up with what's going on in these fields. And it's much easier to do that when you enjoy and you really feel connected with the subject matter. It's something you relate to or something that you really believe in. And a similar revelation actually came to me after I worked on some other fields, translation-wise. Like I tried, I was really curious when I got started and I was open to new experiences. So I think it's helpful too to try different things and see mm-hmm. what you enjoy. That's one way to find out what you really enjoy. You can't know that until you try. Started working on some legal translations, and I realized I really enjoy researching and translating certain documents on specific fields within legal, because legal is such a broad subject too. Yeah. And my father was a lawyer. I read several of the books he wrote. He wrote a few books in Russian on various fields of the law. And he actually proofread many of my translations years ago, before I even started freelancing, when I still worked in the corporate world. And I had that unique experience and interest in certain topics of the law that I didn't really think would, come in handy someday. But I realized as I tried my hand at a few legal translations early on that I really enjoyed researching and getting more experience in this field and interacting with colleagues, discussing, my translations or specific translations of specific terms. So experiences like that can be helpful too, or something that you enjoy in your personal life. Like, I don't know, like you mentioned wellness, health and wellness, nutrition, subjects like these too, if you haven't really had professional experience in certain fields, personal experiences and personal interests can be a good direction to take when you're getting started.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some smart habits for specializing and keeping up with your specialization. First, I think it's smart to choose a specialization that you feel good about, one that you can see yourself working in long term. And yes, of course, it's great if you can find a field that is in high demand. We all want that, right? But even if your specialization is not one of those that seems to be in the highest demand, you can still make good work of it and find clients. And that's where smart diversification habits and marketing habits will come in handy.
Yeah.
Like take one of my specializations, human resources. You may think that it's only corporate clients or, large companies would need that type of materials translated. But what about articles and books? And there are a ton of specialized websites for human resources managers and professionals. There are even blog posts, and there are many books written on the subjects. You can also narrow it down, because human resources is also a very broad field. You can focus on specifically recruitment or retention or benefits for employees or succession planning. There's also this area of international mobility and people moving from one country to another for work, expatriates and such. Mm-hmm. You can think about staff training. training, health and safety aspects, various training for the staff on issues like IT security, conflict resolution, you know, leadership training. There are just so many different topics that you can break down a larger topic like human resources into, mm-hmm. and that may give you ideas for different things that you can do within the subject, and some of them may lend themselves to, you know, localization work or transcreation work, or working on book translation, or even, you know, copywriting, if we're talking about copywriting in your target language. So many different topics that can spark other ideas for you, either on types of materials to work with or types of clients to work with. And then again, is it something that you truly enjoy writing, talking, and researching about? You know, that's an important factor as well. So what about you? Do you agree? How did you choose your specializations, and how did you pick the areas that you decided to work in?
Yeah, I do agree. And I think that that's an interesting thing that you mentioned was about taking your specialization, and you can become even more niche in that area by breaking it down into further fields within your area. Yeah. Like, of course, health and wellness and medicine is, and life sciences is huge, right? There's so many things you could do with that. For example, I was just working with a colleague on her website she works in is oncology. Like, that's her area because she has a background in that. It's really fascinating. I think that it's smart to think about how you can even niche down further. And I know that that scares some people, but I think it's helpful because then, like you said, you can diversify mm-hmm. your business in various ways by providing other services within that field. So if anybody hasn't heard yet, episode 44 on diversifying, that might be a good one to listen to after this, to give you some ideas. But yeah, with me, like I said, I got into healthcare interpreting first. And then I really have always just had an interest in health, wellness, medicine. And so from there, I got further into life sciences, so pharmaceutical clinical trials. And I, even within that, I would work specifically on certain clinical trials for a series of years, because clinical trials tend to last several years. So I've worked on clinical trials with specific drugs for quite some time. So you really do get specialized with certain, like, chronic illnesses or, you know, diseases of various sorts. Yeah. So, you know, you could even get into, you know, really niche down in that way. But if we're talking about smart habits, what about when it comes to keeping up with your specialization, right? Or continuing to grow in your field? Right? You can't just choose something and expect that you won't have to keep up with the changes in your area or advances that will actually help you to be more knowledgeable and better rounded. So some ways that I like to keep up with my specializations, smart habits, if you will, are to join associations in those fields. So for example, I'm a member of the American Medical Writers Association, or AMWA. I'm also a member of ACES, the Society for Editing. And okay, an association for editors might not exactly relate to a specific field per se, but it has helped me in my work because it allows me to keep up with changes in language, updates to style guides and manuals of style, what's going on in the editing world and more, because a lot of us do edit as well, right? And it also has helped me to meet other people who work in medicine and healthcare writing, or medical and healthcare writing. So I've actually been able to get clients from being in specific associations because they need translation. So that's been helpful. And I learn from them, and they get a service from me. So it's been very complimentary to my work in translation. So I try to look outside of just what's available within our, you know, everyday industry, if you will, professions. I also like to keep up with publications, podcasts, news articles, and other media where I can learn more about changes and advances in medicine. Podcasts have been really good for that, by the way, because there's a lot of healthcare and medical related podcasts available. So especially those that relate to chronic illness, vaccines, patient care, and other topics that are related to that. And I like to look for continuing education opportunities. So things like conferences, webinars, seminars, where I can learn from colleagues about specific topics in my area. So for example, I just attended a webinar through the American Translators Association on back translation for Spanish to English medical translators, which was given by our colleague Danielle Maxson, and it was excellent. It was one of the best resources I've seen for medical translators related to back translation, because there's a lot of back translation with the type of work that we do, and there's not many resources on back translation, so it was very well done. And something else I've recently started doing is searching for like these exact topics in my podcasting app, which I kind of just alluded to earlier, looking for podcasts related to health and wellness, but in Portuguese and Spanish, which are my working languages. So I feel like that's a smart habit, too, to try to keep up with your specialization in your other languages. What about you? What are some ways that you keep up with your specialization that you think people might find helpful?
Yeah, I'll try to name a few. It's it can be hard though, because I feel like there's so many different ways in which you can do that and keep up with your specialization. But it can be difficult when you have several areas like me.
Yeah,
I found quite a few interesting ways of keeping up with my specialization on human resources, communications, and corporate social responsibility. And it was easier for me, I think, to do that because I worked as a professional in that field before I started working as a freelance translator. So I already knew coming in, you know, where do professionals working in this field hang out, and what associations and societies and such what that they are a member of, and where they go for resources. So I was able to, for example, for corporate social responsibility, I like to use the resources that are free provided by IPCA, which is the Oil and Gas Industry Association for Environmental and Social Performance. And a lot of these standards and resources are applicable to other industries as well. And they refer to other industry associations as well. So I really like to do that. And they don't just accept members, you know, like me. They're for corporate members, but many of their resources are on their website. They're free of charge. And that goes for other associations that you could think of in other fields, like in communications. I am a member of the International Association of Business Communicators, and they have a chapter here in Houston. They have a podcast. They have a lot of resources on their website.
They are active. I've seen them.
Yeah, they're very active, and they have really great a great library of content on their website for members. So I'm really enjoying that. And then for human resources, I'm a member of the Society for Human Resource Management. They also have a lot of resources on our website. These kinds of associations are not cheap to be a member of. And I would say that even if you can't afford that, you can still, it's still important to explore their websites and see what resources they have, even for non-members. Because just like any other association, they are also trying to attract new members or serve the general public or, you know, the larger professional community. So they do have a lot of resources on their websites and online, like podcasts and such, that are available free of charge. So whichever field you pick as your field for specializing, it's important to research these resources too. Even if they're paid, they do have quite a fair amount of information and resources online free of charge.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
I like to follow them on social media as well and see what they publish, you know, on LinkedIn and Twitter. If they release a new resource, a new document, a new interview, any highlights from the industry, that's a free and easy way to stay in touch with that field too, and get, you know, a good point for a potential conversation with a client, with a current client or a potential client. Like, oh, did you see this in the news? Or congratulations for being featured in this report and things like that.
Yeah.
I do like podcasts too, especially as you mentioned in my other working language, which is Russian. and there is a fair amount of information in Russian on these topics that I like to read online or listen to podcasts or even watch webinars or webcasts. podcasts. YouTube is another great way to look for that information, because many, especially last year, many conferences and many events were recorded and they are available on YouTube. So I would encourage folks to look there as well, and look both for events that were recorded in their target and source language. Pre-pandemic, I also attended a few conferences and trade shows in these fields as well. And I know many of them, if they didn't cancel their events last year, they moved them online, which was much cheaper and easier to attend as well. Mm-hmm. Less overwhelming as well for someone who doesn't actually work in that field, day to day, but is a potential vendor or contractor for companies or people working in these fields. So yeah, for other fields, I like to research new sites, like for sustainability and corporate social responsibility. New sites, set up Google alerts on specific terms or companies or associations that I know are active in this field. Mm-hmm. I mentioned LinkedIn, following these organizations on LinkedIn, seeing what they publish, and just researching online learning opportunities, any books or articles I can find. For localization, I like to stay on top of the news by following people who I know are active in localization online, reading their blog posts, mm-hmm. Looking out for continued learning opportunities on these topics. And I, for localization in particular, but I think for any other field, what is helpful too is to proactively mention to your colleagues that you are either interested or are working in these fields. If they come across a learning opportunity that they think might be a great fit for you, I've noticed they mention it, and I've had people email me and say, hey, have you heard about this conference or this webinar? That's, I know, true. You work. Yeah. And I've done that too for other colleagues. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, if you do meet colleagues who work in the same field as you, and that goes to what we've talked about before, collaboration over competition. Mm-hmm. Check in with them and see where they like to go for continued professional development, and see if that gives you an idea for, things that you could also add to your CBD schedule.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, because I was mentioning in the last episode that I took that international development course with Corinne McKay and Megan Kunkel. Yeah. And mm-hmm. just during that course, I heard about 3 or 4 different conferences that are related right. to international development that all sounded great. And they were very yeah. affordable, because they're online mm-hmm. right now too. Right. So yeah, good point.
Yeah, talk to your colleagues, ask them where they like to go for their CPD, and ask for advice. As I am learning about colleagues who work in similar fields or the same fields as I do, even if they work in other language pairs, I'm making notes to contact them and say, hey, where are you learning this? And why are you attending this course? And how did you like, that event you participated in? That can be really helpful. But it's so easy to let this kind of continued development fall by the wayside when we get busy. Yeah. We're always busy. It's not like client work, where you're getting paid for the time you're spending on these important things. And I know that I have to consciously make time for this kind of things and schedule it into my work week, and really be proactive about it, mm-hmm. because there are so many other things we're doing. So I, having the employee experience behind my back, I know that as an employee, I had to create a professional development plan for myself every year and talk it over with my manager. So I stick to the same habit. And as I set my goals and decide what I want to achieve this coming year, I like to create a professional development plan for myself. And it's just a simple Excel table with a list of courses that I plan to take this year and deadlines for things like when I want to have completed the course. You can even take this idea further. And if you like to review your goals quarterly, and I remember with my managers too, I would have quarterly employee dialogues. Well, you're your own employer, you're your own boss. So you could have, that sort of quarterly check-in with yourself. You can call it a business retreat, you can call it reviewing your goals or whatever, but make sure you include professional development as part of the agenda. And see how are you doing on the goals you have set for the courses you want to take, or any specific educational goals you have set. I like putting this in Asana, and I put the deadlines in Asana and break down the bigger goal. If there's a particular, say, online certificate I'm aiming for, I break it down into manageable tasks. Or if there's, you know, a conference I'm catching up on, I put the specific recordings I want to watch and when I want to be done with them. And even 1 hour of professional development a week is better than nothing.
Yeah.
So I have to be realistic about that too. But my goal is at least 1 hour a week of something, you know. If I can get more, it's great. If I'm working towards a bigger goal, I make sure I cram in more hours than just one. But mm-hmm. That's the base case for me. So what about you? Do you also like to schedule these things?
I do, but I'm not as organized as you, per usual. I mean, I feel like I'm an organized person, but you take these things to another level. So, yeah, but I love the idea of the plan. I think that my plan is usually like a mental plan, whereas I think probably what you're doing is better in the sense of looking at the big picture for the whole year, because you can also put in deadlines for like when registration opens, so you don't miss it and then have to pay a higher fee if the early bird registration rate date passes. And also you'll know the cost for the year, you know, how much you're willing to budget for it. I think that's really helpful. And how much are you willing to spend time-wise too, you know? So I think that, that's definitely helpful. And I do try to schedule these things, but I think I look at it more in terms of like, I'll schedule time when I have like a course or something coming up. I'll make sure that I make the time for that so I don't get too far behind. But that said, everything, you know, being recorded lately, it's easy to get behind because, well, it's just going to be available for a long period of time, right? I like to think that there's a deadline, and some of these things do have deadlines for access by, you know, you have to use it by a certain time. So I try to work backwards from that date to make sure I can get in the things that I want to complete or watch or attend before that date ends. So in that sense, I do definitely put these things on my calendar. I try to do one type of professional development, like either a webinar or some kind of learning, even if it's reading, per week. I try to fit that in. Lately, it's been a lot more than an hour, because there have been several courses at once that I wanted to take. But yeah, definitely. And there are certain times of year that I've noticed that are much busier than other times of year. So it's hard sometimes to choose, or if you can spread it out, it would be great. But sometimes they do just all come up around the same time. And you have to choose what's more important to you based on your goals for like right now, I think. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm actually curious, do you do any planning you did say you do it at the beginning of the year, but do you do it at the beginning of maybe a quarter to determine how much time you're going to spend on it, on like a continuing education and additional learning opportunities, or do you do something different?
I do a quarterly review. I try to stick to that. You know, well, I do at the beginning of the year, or usually at say late December or early January, when I set my goals for the year and I create my PD plan for the year, then I try to do quarterly review and check in with myself and see how I'm doing on those goals, or if I want to adjust something, because sometimes you see that your needs or goals have changed and you need to change course on your continued education as well. But I also found it really helpful too, and I know it sounds like a lot, but I feel like we often underestimate how much time we actually spend on reading and watching things online that are related to our professional development. And we often feel like, oh, I'm not doing enough, or you can also use it as an accountability tool for yourself too. You know, I think it's helpful to either write it down or to note it down electronically. I'm an Excel user, so I do that in Excel, but you can use it in any other tool to just write down what you've actually done. You know, if you've spent an hour researching a particular subject online, or if you watched so many webinars, or completed a course, because then you have something tangible you can go back to. And doesn't matter how often you do that review, if you do it annually or quarterly, you have something tangible to tap yourself on the shoulder and say, look, I've actually done all that, or I need to do better, and adjust your goals accordingly. So I think you need to have some flexibility, but also not let these things just slip through your fingers and actually you know, note that down.
Yeah.
And another thing that, you know, I mentioned that your goals can change. So you have to be rather flexible and not be too strict with yourself on things you have decided to readjust, because things happen. And like last year, I did less continued professional development on some of the areas that I did more of before. And I really focused on localization last year, and maybe some topics that I thought would be a good subject for diversifying for me potentially.
Yeah.
So looking back at my professional development expenses and all the things I did last year, I was like, wow, I really did invest a lot in professional development that year, which was logical because everything was up in the air last year. We weren't sure what's going to happen. You know, maybe there was a slow period, or you weren't sure how the specific industry or the economy overall is going to react long term.
Didn't you also tell me at some point that last year you had more localization work than ever too?
Yes.
So I feel like that's a really good investment,
right?
Then, because, you know, I think that it does pay for itself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it turned out well in that respect. So we've mentioned quite a lot of ideas in this episode. I do think that being a part of a professional association, as you talked about in the fields that you specialize in, and talking to colleagues, being open to new ideas, trying things, but also really investing the time and effort in your areas of specialization and growing in them is important. It is just amazing, I feel like, how much you can learn from colleagues and realize like, oh, that's a great idea. I should be doing this too. Or, oh, it doesn't sound appealing to me at all. But it's good to know that I should not be doing this, you know, in terms of like things to learn or resources to use. And speaking of ATA, I know we talked about ATA earlier. There was a webinar that we did recently through ATA in our Back to Business Basics series. Mm-hmm. And it was on choosing and building a specialization. And it is free for members. So if you have any of our listeners who are ATA members, you can go and watch it for free. And non-members can watch it for a small fee. And also, we have recently launched a new series of the ATA podcast called Inside Specialization. And it's absolutely free on any podcasting platform, you know, especially if you're Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts user. And in this series on a podcast, we do short interviews on specific subject fields or specializations in translation and interpreting with experts in this field. So these are short and really like spot on, you know, how did you grow in this field? What are some good resources for those who are interested in such? So I wanted to make sure that we mentioned these ATA resources too.
For anybody who's not aware, Veronica is the chair of the Professional Development Committee. So she's the person to go to if you have any questions about what's going on professional development wise. But it's good. There's some really good stuff you guys are doing right now there. So that's awesome. Mm. I'm really happy that we could share that.
Thanks.
Okay, well, I think that covers everything for this episode, but before we wrap up, let's do a smart habit check-in. My smart habit is kind of funny. It's actually something that I'm not doing. I am not checking my emails after hours again. I was doing so well, and then there was something that came up. I think it was like a vacation period or something where my daughter was home from school. It must have been around the end of the year or the beginning of this year.
Yeah.
Where she was home, so I was just kind of like getting things in where I could. And I got into this bad habit of checking my emails and stuff when I was not working. And then I was constantly thinking about work, right? Because it was all at different times of day. So my smart habit right now is turning everything off when I'm not working. So that's been really helpful. And it's really allowed me to do more things for my business and for my personal projects and goals that I wouldn't be able to do because I'd be distracted by my email. So it sounds like a small thing, but truly it's made a huge difference for me.
Yes, it's a lot. And I mean, we should really do an episode on email overwhelm and how to avoid that in the future.
That's a good idea.
I can relate. Yeah.
Yeah. So what smart habit are you working on?
All right. So I'm working on you know, sticking to my morning and evening routine, because I feel like it's really a struggle for me during any holidays, but especially in the summer because of the long summer break when the school is closed and the kids are home, or we have, you know, just some summer camps or some like random activities here and there. So there's like no fixed schedule as to when to drop off the kids somewhere. Mm-hmm. And there's no sense of urgency in the morning. It's like, you know, it's relaxed and everything's flexible. So we're going to bed later. I'm doing way less planning than I normally do. You know, I don't have to think of a specific time, you know, times and deadlines and lunches and all of that. There's some of that, but not as much as during the school year. And of course, summer feels like a welcome break, but it also disrupts our schedule. So I am doing an intentional effort to still stick to my morning and evening routine, making sure that I do have that at least half an hour to an hour in the morning to myself, just doing the things I need to do for myself before the kids are up, and in the evening really decompressing and being away from electronics and getting into that sort of rest mindset before going to bed.
Yeah, similar goals here.
Cool. So should we also share what we're currently reading or have read recently?
Yeah, let's do that.
So that's something I'm not super proud of, but I'm excited to report, but that I finally finished the book that we read in Yves Badeau's book club, Global Reads, that we have mentioned many times before, and we'll link to it again. And it's a book that the book club has actually read a couple of months ago, but I only now have finished it.
What's it called?
It's a book called Bright by Dwanwat Pimwana. I hope I'm not butchering the name, but it's a really nice book. But I think what got to me at the beginning is that as I got started and I realized the story of the main character, and I'm not going to disclose it here for anyone who didn't read it, it's a child, and anything that relates to children and any kind of difficulties in their lives, I always have, you know, as a mother of little kids, it can sometimes be hard for me to get through. But the story was really nicely written, so I did power through it eventually. And I, you know, as towards the second half of the book, I really got over my initial feelings and was really enjoying the story. But it's a really short and lovely book about a working class community in Thailand, and a little boy who is being raised by the community, by the people in the community due to the family circumstances. And because it's a different culture, it's a different reality. Just very humbling and eye-opening in some ways, but also very, it has some really vivid descriptions of various characters, their character traits, their life, their interactions, the day-to-day things happening in this community. I just loved that part of it. My husband and I visited Thailand many years ago, and I just loved rediscovering some parts of this culture through this book. And the story is really, really nice. So what about you?
Yeah, I'm actually reading a book for work. I'm reading Persuasive Copywriting, Cut Through the Noise and Communicate with Impact. Yeah, it's a book that actually was recommended by our colleague Abigail Dahlberg. She was reading it. She shared it on, I think, Instagram or something. And I asked her about it because I know that we both do copywriting. And she said it was an excellent book. So I just started it. I don't have much to tell you about. And if you're not really into copywriting, it wouldn't be interesting to you. The description says it's the ultimate copywriting survival guide for the 21st century. Yeah, so it's interesting because, you know, it goes into how creative people often develop their skills when they're on the job. So it's difficult to figure out what is successful copy if you're developing your skills on the job. It's very interesting because, like, translation copywriting is something that you get much better at through a lot of practice, like most skills, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a really interesting read by Andy Maslen, M-A-S-L-E-N. And so it goes into like what makes people make certain decisions and what makes customers decide to buy based on copy, obviously. So yeah, it's a really interesting read. And so I'm happy that she recommended that one to colleagues in general. Okay, so that's it. Thanks for tuning in to another Smart Habits for Translators episode. We'd love to hear from you if you have any smart habits for specializing and keeping up with your specialization. You can leave a comment on the show notes page for this episode, which you'll find on our website, or you can tag us on social media. We are on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn, or you can email us at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com.
Yes, we look forward to hearing your tips and how you maintain your areas of specialization too. Next week, our email subscribers will get a summary of this episode, including the links to all the resources that we mentioned today. So if you're not receiving our emails yet, please sign up on our website, smarthabitsfortranslators.com.
And if you liked this episode, there are a couple of simple ways you can show your support. Please share it with your colleagues and friends and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. This only takes a minute, and we've recorded a quick video tutorial to show you how to do it. We'll link to that in the show notes.
Talk to you soon.
We hope you enjoyed this episode and discovered some simple strategies that you can apply today at work or at home to help you achieve the lifestyle you desire. If you did, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
If you have a topic you want us to cover, please send us a message at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com. If you like this episode, we'd appreciate if you'd leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. And please share the podcast with other translators you know.